Crossing on 2FM.
Thanks for the two Johnnies. It's Monday, the 3rd of October, and this is Game On. Coming up today, Erling Haaland is already making it a very long winter for Premier League defenders.
De Bruyne back to the left hand side. Gomez's ball across. It's there! Haaland! It's another hat trick! This is phenomenal from Erling Haaland. What he's doing here this season, the way he started with Manchester City. A hat trick in a third consecutive home Premier League match.
We'll have more on that with Alan Cawley and Stephen Kelly shortly. Plus in rugby, Ian Kelly and Stephen Ferris make sense of the weekend's URC action as Peter O'Mahony's Munster finally got a win.
Yeah, it's like we got a little bit apprehensive. We kind of forced a bit of play, I think, at times. But look, they're a good side. They're getting better and better every year. So look, you've got to put a huge amount of respect on the way they can play as well.
All that, plus the rest of the sporting weekend, and we have copies of FIFA 23 to give away. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
So, Marie, how was your weekend?
Busy.
Sounds like a really tricky question looking at you.
It's a tricky question because I was about to get into the old FIFA 23 comp, but sure.
Maria, we'll go there, so.
And we can come back to the sporting weekend then.
Yeah.
You're go up to first.
Give the listeners what they want. Straight exactly. Into FIFA.
You're up first.
I'm up first, am I? I wasn't ready. All you FIFA fans will know that EA Sports FIFA 23 has officially launched worldwide and is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, PC, Stadia, PC 4 and Xbox One for Alan Cawley.
That's really impressive, Ruby. We'll go with PS4 though, I think.
Will we?
PS4, yeah.
What's that?
PlayStation.
All right.
I knew we were going to do a great job on this. We always do such a brilliant job. And for the first time ever, FIFA 23 will feature women's club teams from the Barclays Women's Super League and Division 1 Arkema, extending its position as the world's most authentic football experience. To celebrate its release, we have a copy of FIFA 23 to give away every day this week. All you have to do is to be in with the chance to win is to answer the following question.
Really difficult one. Which national team does Manchester City star Erling Haaland represent?
Text your answer, name, email address and whether you want a PS5 or Xbox copy to 51552. And as always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for details.
What if you have a PS4? Can you not get it then?
You can.
All right. I'm just wondering. I don't have one, but I did have one, but it got robbed.
It got robbed? Okay, right. We won't go there. We'll move on from this now. Good housekeeping, though, Ruby. We did a great job at that.
Oh, sure, here. Did a better job than I did with the basketball draw anyway. That's all I know.
too soon. Weekend was great, Ruby. I was at a load of matches, as I usually am, and that was about the height of it.
Not so bad. Alan Cawley's in the studio with us. Alan, how was your weekend? About as good as mine, probably watching Erling Haaland and Phil Foden destroying Manchester United.
Yeah, before that though, I was at a game myself on Friday night, Bohemians against UCD with the great Kenny Cunningham. So that's what I did Friday night.
That's an experience.
Oh, sure, Kenny, look.
What did you eat?
Don't even get me started.
That's all I want to know.
Don't even get me started. He brought the batch loaf with him.
You're joking.
And he went home for a bit of mackerel at 10 o'clock.
Oh,
I probably shouldn't say this on
what
air.
What did he put in the batch loaf? Did he get chips when
he
was
bring the batch loaf, but he loves the batch loaf.
He does, yeah.
But he did a fish at 10 o'clock on Friday night when I dropped him home. Imagine that. I better
on
not
the chipper or fish that he's going cooking?
No, proper going home to cook the real deal. Proper fish. Yeah. I was the one that went to the chipper.
Fair play to him.
But we had a good weekend as well, Ruby. Game then yesterday with the kids. And then, like you, unfortunately, I had to endure the turmoil of the Manchester Derby yesterday. But it was an experience just watching how good they were as well. And I'm sure we'll get into it in a little while. But
I was at the race in Tipperary and actually had, I won't say the pleasure, actually it was quite joyful, but there happened to be four Manchester City fans from Manchester and Tipperary, and they actually took great pleasure in coming across to my where I was doing TV work from to pretty much slag me every time Man City scored a goal. So I saw a lot of those gentlemen yesterday afternoon.
They were over every 5 minutes, yeah.
They were in and out, yeah. They had more interest in what was going on in the Etihad than they seemed to have in Tipperary, but I did have a giggle at it.
I must say, though, the weekend did get off to a really sad start with the passing of Brian Mullins. So an absolute legend, icon, colossus. He's been called so many deserving names over the last while. So many great tributes to him as well. He seemed to really make an impact on people. And, you know, often you'll hear people say nice things about people who pass away, and sometimes it feels like it's just for the sake of it. But with Brian Mullins, he seemed to really have an effect on people when he met them. Not always good. Lots of people said he was cantankerous and cranky when he needed to be as well, but he definitely had the respect of everybody. So just a really sad weekend. I knew him when I was a kid. So he was
Your dad was in school with him,
wasn't he? Yeah, they were in the same class in college. So they were in that very first PE class in UL. And he'd come down to Clare for the summer sometimes and come into the house. And I still remember him coming in when we were kids, just because he seemed like a giant then. And every time I met him after that, he seemed like a giant. He never lost that impact of just that presence that he had when he was in a room. And lucky enough, that PE class that my dad was in, they had some brilliant sports people. It was that first Thomond College PE class, and they handpicked all the best sports people from around in all different sports to study PE, and they shaped the PE curriculum then that kids would have done when they first started to study PE. But everyone in that class was really kind to me on my journalism journey, and Brian Mullins was one of those people who anytime I wanted an interview, he gave it. And he was no fan of the media, like as people will tell you, but he always had time for me. And I interviewed him only about 6 months ago for my podcast We Become Heroes, and he didn't know he was unwell at that time. And he was in great form, like just telling me stories, reminding me of great days that he had and great times that he had and all the different sports that he played. And he was just brilliant. Like he always had time for me. And, you know, he always remembered those people that give you that little bit of time. I don't remember his football. I wasn't around it for that. I've seen clips on YouTube, but by all accounts, he was absolutely savage.
The fact that he was probably so given of his time, Ree, is a compliment to your dad, because obviously they were good pals and good friends. And when he did go to Clare, I'm sure he looked after him. So I'm sure your dad was upset over the weekend as well then.
Yeah, we knew, but like they have a WhatsApp group. The PE class have a WhatsApp group. So they'd been keeping in touch over the last while. And it was great because they used to always do these Zooms. So, you know, the way we would have done Zooms for work during lockdown, that PE class did Zooms during lockdown for the crack. So like you can imagine now all the different sports people that they would have encountered during the year, with like Larry McCarthy, the head of the GA at the moment, was one of them. Pat Spillane was in the PE college, Ted Owens, loads of different people, but they used to have these Zooms anyway and just have the crack. And I'd say it was just brilliant.
So much for the older generation not being technical.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, Dad would close the door of the sitting room, was like, I'm going to my Zoom now with the lads. And they'd have great reunions and all that sort of stuff as well. But like a really sad time for his friends and family, and everyone connected to him and his club St Vincent's. But he just really, to me anyway, epitomised my experience of the GAA, which was he was a dedicated club man to St Vincent's. He really made the club what it is, and then represented his county on the biggest stage and won All Ireland's. And and Ruby, in a way, like his son Nathan put up a tweet the other day, or a little tribute to him the other day, I think it was last night actually, and he said that his dad Brian always said to him that every person is the same. They've two arms, they've two legs, they've a head, but it comes down to who wants it most, who wants to win the most, and who's willing to work hardest to go after what they want. And that was his philosophy, and that's what his children then carried with them. And I'm sure he influenced an awful lot of people as well to have that same attitude.
Well, sure, it's incredible desire, who wants it most. And it's so easy to say it, a hard thing to probably teach, but I get the feeling Brian Mullins taught it to a lot of people.
And he,
Colm O'Rourke had a lovely piece yesterday.
Piece,
and it was brilliant. And just kind of, as you said, mentioned, and he was cantankerous as well, or he was tough and whatever. Colm O'Rourke's piece was lovely yesterday.
Yeah, and because I used to work in Satanta Sports, and he came in to do an interview with me, an hour long sit down chat. And like, I was a really inexperienced journalist, like he didn't have to do it, but he gave the time. And you know, it took a while when you're setting up for television, trying to fix the chair, and you know, he was getting so annoyed. But the minute the camera turned on, then like he was just lovely and so giving with his stories and all the rest. But and another thing as well, Ruby, and you'll probably definitely be able to respect this, is that when he was on the pitch then, like any time that the clips that I saw, like it was just pure leading by example, and that's thrown around. Like you don't, you know, people say that's what you do to show leadership, but he actually seemed to do it, which is a, you know, it's not something that you always get as well, but he was, you know, body on the line every single time, 100% effort.
Stand up and be counted. Actions speak louder than words, Marie.
Exactly that. So yeah, sad now, and I'll miss him. And even any time I was in UCD calling in for the coffee, or any time I saw him, we'd have the chat and asking about the kids. And
they'll miss him in UCD.
Yeah, they will. Yeah,
like
yeah.
I go back to when I played at UCD many years ago, and he was such, as you said, obviously he was a big strong man, so he had that presence anyway.
Yeah.
But he carried such a presence even around the place, and it was almost as if we knew who was in charge regardless of what sport you were taking part in UCD. Obviously he was Gaelic, but you knew who the main man was in terms of, you mentioned their leadership and what he did as a player, but it was the same when he was looking after UCD.
Yeah, and would have shaped like shaped UCD from a sports perspective as well, not just a Gaelic Games perspective, but sport in general. And that generation, Brian's generation that came through that PE college, like they would have shaped and influenced a huge amount of sports development in this country as well. So it's as we see now with Larry McCarthy in the GAA as well, he'll have left a huge legacy, and many more of them have as well. Just a sad start to the weekend, really. So that's kind of what I suppose dominated a lot of my weekend when I was at matches as well, thinking about all the great people that I've met along the way.
Yeah, a great man he was, and may he rest in peace.
That's for sure.
That's a sad note, Marie. I don't know how we move on from that. Perhaps a commercial break and then we'll head on to the soccer.
On to Erling Haaland now. We like to lift it up with the colossus that man is. And Alan and I, and you, Ruby, as well, have spoken about Haaland so often. And, you know, you run out of things to say about him. But, like, this weekend, Alan, like, it's mind-blowing stuff, really, when you just see the amount of ability that he has and the way he's able to perform on the biggest stage under the most pressure, and it doesn't seem to faze him at all.
Yeah, I think it's 103 club goals now in 100 games or something like that, and the numbers are ridiculous. And the only ones we've seen numbers like this from, but it's been over such a longer period, as obviously Messi and Ronaldo. But to see the frequency which he's scoring and the way he's hit the ground running at Man City, it is phenomenal. It's mind-blowing. It really is. And I go back to that chat we had at the start where people were doubting would he have the impact, Marie, after the Charity Shield game. But there was a little clip yesterday, and obviously everybody speaks about the goals and the impact and everything that he's done so far. But you mentioned there about mentality and who wants it the most. There was a clip, and I don't know if anyone, it would have passed by so many people, but it stuck out for me in the 80th minute, and I'm not even sure what the score was at that stage. I'm sure it might be,
I'll tell you what it was,
6-1,
when
was it,
Foden scored and he got off the ground to go and get the pass,
the one where it was the 80th minute and Martinez basically tried to do him on the halfway line and come in behind him, caught him, and to be fair, the two of them fell to the floor, but Haaland was up so quickly, and he was just, and it's like something you teach to all young players, but not all of them do it, obviously. But for him, who's after scoring a hat-trick, getting all the plaudits, hitting the numbers that he's hitting, but still here he is in the 80th minute, and his desire to get up off the ground and burst towards the edge of the box and get back into the box to try and score another goal. And that's the thing that sticks out for me. Like, the stuff he's doing is not by fluke. He's obviously dedicated his young life to his profession so far. He's only 22. I mentioned before about the mini documentary thing on Sky about the strength and conditioning coach, about how he turned him into basically the physical presence that he is as well, but not by overpowering him. He keeps him lean and slim, but the burst of speed that he has, and we see that even in the goal. He scores all types of goals in terms of the header, then he's bursting into the box, his finishes. But for me, the biggest thing with him so far, and why he's going to go on to do such great things, it's his mentality is unbelievable. He just wants to score every time he touches the ball.
Stephen Kelly is with us on the line as well. Stephen, surely there's an opportunity now for a defender in the Premier League to put a stop to him and make a name for themselves for life if they can hold him scoreless.
They'll make a name themselves, but it might be in the wrong way, because they're probably trying to injure him. Like, that's God's honest. You're looking at how you're going to stop this guy, and you kind of think it's so difficult. And it's not just his physical attributes, which are off the scale, like his height, his strength, his leap, his pace, but his cleverness of his runs. Like, you see smaller strikers make the runs he make, and you think, oh, like the likes of Robbie Keane, you watch him peel off shoulders, and Aguero, and you think, wow, their movement's amazing. He does that for a big guy as well. He's always given one run for the centre back, one run for himself, and because he does that at such pace, and when he gets in touch like this with them, he can shove them as well and then go behind them. It's like, honestly, it's very hard to see how anybody could stop this guy. And then you look statistically, they're saying that, like, ridiculously, if he is to continue on this goal scoring form for the next four seasons, he'll break Shearer's record in the Premier League. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. Like, it's like,
it is
just
incredible.
Just crazy. It's crazy.
But rather than scoring, Stephen, Alan, obviously there was the pass in De Bruyne that Haaland scored from, but then Haaland's pass to Foden for Foden's second. That was incredible as well.
Yeah, and that's where he's chipping in as well. You mentioned the attributes to his game, and it's not just about goal scoring as well. His movement occupies defenders, but then when he's in a position where he has to create, you see the goal for Foden, where Foden's breaking in at the back post and it's his ball across the box which finds him. Then the little pass you mentioned through to Foden for Foden's hat-trick goal as well. So there's so many facets to his game, Ruby, and the fact that he's only 22, which is the scary thing, he's going to get even better. And now he's playing with a level of player. Not saying he wasn't playing with great players at Dortmund or Salzburg, but he's playing with a level of player now, and he's under a coach that's only going to make him better as well. That's one thing with Guardiola, that he actually, even though he has great players at his disposal, he still gets more out of them and turns them into even greater players, if that's possible, with his coaching. And I think that's what we'll see with Haaland. And at 22, it's scary to think, like Stephen mentioned there, about even the conversations that people are having to even be suggesting that he'll get close to Shearer's record after him only being in the league 8 games. But that's the crazy, I suppose, ridiculous stuff he's doing at the moment, that these are the conversations that need to be had. The stat for me that stood out yesterday was he has as many hat-tricks already after 8 games that Vardy has had at Ronaldo and Frank Lampard, and they play in the Premier League all their life.
But Stephen, he's playing with a quality player now that can make him great, but can he also do that to the players that are on the Man City team? Grealish seemed to be more active yesterday than he was. Does having Haaland there with his ability, can he bring the rest of that team forward with him?
You honestly, as long as I've played football, you're a better player with the better players you play with. That's a fact. Like, your game improves by playing with better players. And there was an incident in the game, actually, where he breaks through and he feeds Jack Grealish, and Grealish doesn't take the shot off, and he gives it back to him. Grealish has to find the back, and he's not ready for it. He set him up to score. And you see Haaland, I think he's on his hat-trick at this stage. And it's another incident where you might not see it, but he hammers Jack Grealish. Absolutely nails him and says, take the shot on, what are you doing? I give you, that's for you to score, you should take that shot on. And he's demanding more from the people around him, and like, at 22 years of age, to be in a position where like, it's not selfish, he wants everybody else around him to be at a higher level. So to think what everybody's done, and I think Kevin De Bruyne must just be rubbing his hands together thinking, every time he gets the ball, and Kevin De Bruyne is one of the best, as soon as they receive it, they know where they're going to pass it, they get the heads up, and then they can actually deliver it into that space. Like, he can put a ball in the sixpence from pretty much anywhere in the pitch. So to have a player like Haaland that's so willing a runner and times his run and makes the space for him to find them, it's like a match made in heaven. You know, those times you saw Kane and Son do it seasons ago, but this is on a different level to that, I think.
It'd be interesting, Alan, to see what the future holds, from just hearing his dad speaking after the match yesterday and saying, you know, maybe 3 seasons max and then move on. It's not really the Man City way, though.
No, and it's you'd love to know, I suppose, be a fly on the wall with those conversations, because I suppose up to this point, Marie, it's almost as if they've had his career mapped out for him. And if that's the thinking, that he comes here for 2 or 3 years, because it's only a matter of time before Real Madrid and Barcelona or whoever, I'm not suggesting that Man City are on that level, but in terms of the prestige that those two clubs have, if they've come knocking on the door, generally they get who they want. So I'd say it is probably only 2 or 3 years maybe down the line that might happen. But if they were to go on and win a Champions League now, Man City, and with him, and that's something that people have to remember, as good and all as Man City have been with Guardiola, they still haven't won the Champions League. Now they're hoping he's going to be the final piece of that jigsaw. And if they were to go on and maybe win one this year and follow it up with him and the team, who knows, would he stay then, or would Guardiola move on? There's a lot of kind of, I suppose, different things that could happen before those conversations start, but the fact that his father suggested that, it would make you wonder a little bit, is his career almost mapped out for him?
you just wonder what the goals are, like, you know, for them. Yeah. Like, what's success? Mm. Like, is it,
well, especially when, like, when we mentioned there that people are talking about already the records.
Yeah.
So is that not a goal for him to maybe stick around at Man City and break that record? You don't know. Like, what does the Premier League really mean to him growing up a young Norwegian boy or yeah. whatever? Is it about Barcelona? Is it about Real Madrid? I suppose they're the conversations you'd have to have with him and his dad or whatever. The fact that they're suggesting it. I think we should mention as well about Foden. Like, all the focus is on Haaland. Yeah. Foden's 22 as well.
And it's,
I think,
no harm though, Al. It's no harm that there isn't focus on the likes of him and Grealish, because I don't think that they carry it well.
Oh no, I think Foden carries it well. I think he does. He's 22 years of age, and you think of, since he's come into the team, he's been a revelation, Marie. And when he's been a revelation since 17, 18. And all the talk, if you go back to it, when
I mean,
he wasn't
off the pitch, by the way. I mean, they don't carry the pressure and the attention off the pitch so very well.
Well,
so
definitely Grealish, but I would agree with that. I think Foden is an absolute superstar.
Nerve, Marie, you hit a nerve. He likes Foden.
I love Foden. I do. And whatever about, I know there's a couple of little things maybe you're suggesting off the pitch with Foden, but there's bigger ones maybe with Grealish. But I think no one can question Foden's mentality on the pitch. And to think of a young lad, and when you think of Man City, who they could probably buy, who they want, and when Guardiola took over with the great players that they have, for a young lad to be good enough to break into that setup, and for Guardiola to hold on to him when everybody was suggesting, oh, you need to go out and play and you need to get game time, young English lad, it's no good him sitting on the bench. He was getting an unbelievable education just being around those players every day of the week. And you look at him now, he's forced his way into that team over the last probably 18 months, scores in all the big games, delivers in all the big games, goes about it without any fuss. In terms of a mentality, it's unbelievable, I think, Foden. And for 22 years of age as well, he scored over 50 goals now at City. He's a superstar as well.
Stephen, is his ambition not simply to be the greatest footballer of all time? To be Maradona, Messi, yeah. Ronaldo. Ronaldo sitting in the stand watching him yesterday. So is his dad not mapping him out to be considered the greatest of all time?
I think that's his dad. I think they're, when they're talking about it, and if the fact he's gone through different leagues, like he's done it in the Bundesliga, and that was probably as long as he would have been able to, but, you know, he could have gone to Bayern if he wanted to and comfortably won that league there and been a superstar for them. But jumping ship and coming to the Premier League the way he has, it's about coming into this league and dominating it, and that's what he wants. He wants to dominate it. And then the only real one is, at the moment, is Real. I know Barcelona is a huge pull, but you would say Madrid are the only team that go after City, especially if City can go and clinch a Champions League. And the way they're playing now, with the players that weren't even available for them yesterday, they had a few injuries, you kind of feel like that there should be nothing stopping them, apart from probably Real Madrid, who just know how to win their competition. But for the long run, it's about him just being the best goal scorer of all time. And at the moment, he stays injury free and he stays like this, you can't put past him. You really can't. And it's actually ludicrous to think we're talking about the numbers that Ronaldo and Messi put up, that there's actually somebody that physically looks like they could get to those numbers, because that's actually scary. I thought you'd never see the likes of that again.
Personally, I think you should move to Real Madrid as quick as possible. Like, maybe next season would be a good time to go. Alan, we talked about
January window.
Yeah, exactly. Let's start planning that season. Alan, we have talked about Man City for long enough now. Manchester United, were they bad, or were Man City just too good?
I would kind of go, well, it's a little bit of both, to be fair, Marie. Man City were exceptional, and there's no getting away with that. And Man United were completely outplayed. But I do think Man United could have done things to probably stop them a little better than what they did, and particularly in that midfield area. And Ten Hag had a go at them after, and saying there wasn't enough desire and heart and they weren't up for the fight. But I think he has to take responsibility as well, because if you're going in against a team that is free scoring as Man City, that's their 20th goal they scored in four home games in the league so far, and going back to their last 8 home games, they've scored 4 or more in each of those games as well. So if you're going up against a team with the attacking prowess that they have, and Haaland and De Bruyne and all the other lads that we mentioned, and you're going in and being as open as you were, and with Eriksen, like, we love Eriksen on the ball and everything's been true, but defensively, you're wasting your time in a game like that with having him as a deep-lying midfielder, and you have Casemiro sitting on the bench. So for me, that was crazy that he didn't play Casemiro in a game like that. I'm sure if he had his chance again, Ten Hag, he definitely would have looked at that area. But the worrying thing, if you look at the goals, Marie, and this is where Ten Hag is a major problem, and with those two, because McTominay wanders all over a little bit. He doesn't have that defensive instinct and the discipline just to sit there. He's full of energy and life, and that can be endearing for a spell, and he'll get away with it against the lesser teams. But when they were in possession yesterday, they looked so vulnerable, because as soon as they lost it on the edge of the box, you look at the third goal and fourth goal in particular, and as soon as it was turned over and there was a transition into De Bruyne behind Eriksen, and I think on the third one he was to the right of Eriksen, and were so open, and basically it was three passes and it was a goal. So I think it's okay Ten Hag coming out and saying in a derby and they didn't have the fight and desire. I think they were just completely outplayed by a better team and better players, but I think he has to take responsibility as well for the way to set up, because they were far too open.
What about the first goal then, Stephen? That was 7, 8, 9 passes maybe, but only after 6 minutes, and they completely outplayed a fresh United.
Yeah, I think that just lacks of concentration from certain players on the pitch. And the problem that you have against City is that you don't get second opportunities to stop them. They punish you so quickly. And I think, you know, coming out the traps like they did. And I think the problem for which all over the pitch yesterday, they were getting sucked. They were getting drawn towards the balls. And maybe that's what, and it does, if you're playing against fantastic footballers, you get sucked towards the ball because you feel like you need to stop them. But then what the problem with City is they have fantastic footballers running past you. So when they find them in the space, or they find the two passes around you and you've drawn yourself out and you're exposed, and they can finish you as well. And like I said, the switching off of Eriksen at times, McTominay, you know, that's difficult. The fullbacks, I thought, you know, being half decent, I don't rate them great, but I said defensively, but they were poor in the games yesterday and got drawn out of position. And then you even look at the last goal, I know that was a 6, but for Foden's, there's like 5 players just going towards Haaland, like all staring at the ball. Like, and if that happened to your under 10 side, you'd be like, come on, lads, don't all look at the ball. At least one of you is look over your shoulder to see where the player is. So there was some criminal defending at times that allowed them to score. But, you know, you don't always get punished like that. But against City, you will.
Well, they were chasing shadows. Simple as that.
Yeah, they were, Ruby. And like, when we have these conversations about Man United, and we often laugh and joke about ourselves and being Man United fans, and you think back to the glory days and the great team that they were, and now when we have these conversations, you're suggesting they need to get back to Man City or Liverpool's level that we've seen, or Real Madrid to win the Champions League, and we often say they're a million miles off that. The players, like Stephen mentioned here, the fullbacks, Dalot is not good enough. Like, and this is what exposes them at that level. Dalot will be good enough against Southampton, but it's not good enough for Man United to finish ahead of Southampton or those lesser lights. They're trying to overtake a Man City or a Liverpool. And Malassie is only new to the club, but he got found out massively yesterday as well, taken off at half time. The Martinez issue as well. Like, you couldn't really blame him as such, because I think there was very little protection in front of them. But to get to the level that they're trying to get to, and we speak about obviously Man City in such spectacular ways, and you think of how far Man United have to go to try and get to that level, it's a long, long way, Ruby. It really is. And again, I go back to the manager, and maybe he got lulled into thinking the 4 wins that they had, and there was a bit of stability in the team and naming the same team for the last 4 games, and that's why he probably went with that yesterday. But I'm sure he woke up this morning thinking, wow, we still have a long, long way to go.
It's not what I thought the table would look like at this time of the season. I thought that, you know, we'd be kind of heading into World Cup build up, and that Man City would probably be top, maybe Liverpool second, but it's not the case at all. Arsenal are the ones that are top, Stephen. Are they the real deal? No, I think we've lost Stephen, Alan, so we'll go with you. Are Arsenal the real deal?
I think they're the real deal, Marie. Yeah. Over the weekend, they were absolutely brilliant. I mentioned since the season has started about how impressed I have been with Arteta and the job that he's done, the signings that have made such an impact, Zinchenko, Jesus as well. And against Spurs, well, to be fair, the first half of the match, I felt Arsenal were great for 20-25 minutes, but Spurs were looking really dangerous on the break every time, and it was looking like they could score at will any time, especially towards the last 15-20 minutes of that first half. And at half time, you're kind of thinking this is in the balance, and probably Spurs and Conte, with the way they were playing and sitting so deep and trying to counter-attack, that they would have been happy with that. The concession of that early goal, and then Arsenal took over, and I thought they were brilliant, Arsenal, and I think they've been brilliant all season, regardless of how spectacular Man City have been. I think Arsenal have been brilliant.
Stephen, did you drop out because you heard we were going to be talking about Arsenal-Spurs?
Yeah, I just cut off. I just thought,
now's a good time to exit.
Yeah, just let's just go. Let's just go. We just give Ruby a bit about Manu and then jump off.
Stephen, we did get a text in saying, can someone ask Stephen about Spurs? Ha ha.
Yeah, I know. You know what it is? It's, and again, it's horrible. Like, the derby, it's one of those games that they never want to lose. And like I said, I've been there before against supreme Arsenal teams. But I think Carly hit the nail on the head. I think up at the half time, you felt they were in it and they were comfortable to an extent. And they didn't look like they were being overstretched. And Arsenal did play some really good football, but Tottenham were able to weather that storm slightly, which is before they would have been run over. And then they get that second goal, which goes against, it's poor defending, goes against the run of, not against the run of play, but catches them off guard, and then sending off changes it. They still losing 3-1, disappointing, and Conte would be furious with the goals they conceded and the manner they conceded them. But you got to think that, you know, Arsenal, you got to give them full plaudits, because for a team now, they look so confident, they look energetic, they look like a team that's in the ascendancy, and yet they're sitting top and pretty at the table. And it's crazy to think that they're doing so well in the top there and you're still not tipping them because of how extremely good City are. But they deserve to be there. And, you know, Tottenham were unbeaten up to this point, so it was a huge North London derby, as big as it's been for a long, long time. You know, Arsenal top of the table, Tottenham unbeaten. There was a lot at stake for two teams that are in their Champions League position at the moment, and you know, Arsenal to come out on top, you got to tip your hat to them. Even though I hate doing so, they were the better side overall in the day, and you know, I think the sending off changed it, and it's disappointing for him to make a tackle like that and go off the way he did. But you know, I think Arsenal were probably edged it.
Steve or Alan, you mentioned Arteta's signings. Jesus looks to have some energy and really be reveling in a different role with Arsenal than he had with City.
Yeah, he's been absolutely brilliant, Ruby. Since, again, we speak about Haaland's impact, but Jesus has been every bit as good. Maybe not scoring, obviously, as many as him, but certainly the impact on the club and the team, he's been absolutely fantastic. And I think you asked Stephen a question earlier about can Haaland bring other players along with him. I think that's what the signings of Zinchenko and Jesus have done for that Arsenal squad, because it's almost like the mentality has shifted to these two boys walking into the dressing room and having been there and done it at City, and almost thinking the rest of the dressing room looking at them thinking, these boys know what it's all about, to obviously have that mentality to go on and try and win a league or win a cup or whatever Arsenal are obviously vying for. So I definitely think the other players have almost raised their game as well at how well Jesus and Zinchenko have done. And I look around the team, they're very well balanced. Partey in midfield as well. Xhaka looks like he has a new lease of life, looks fit and strong. Little Saka, who I love on the wing, is absolutely brilliant and a great attitude up and down. Like, you think last week at Southgate and all the problems he has, he didn't even pick Saka. I think Saka is absolutely brilliant. Martinelli's done really well for them too, so they've a really good balance and good shape about them. The question is, because of how good Man City are, how long can Arsenal maintain it, and can you see them winning a league? I can't, to be honest with you, but I definitely think that they're certainly going on an onward trajectory and upward trajectory as well. I think they've been absolutely brilliant since the start of the season.
So Stephen, we've spoken about Arteta. Now, what is Jurgen Klopp going to do? Because let's face it, Liverpool were lucky to get away with a draw last Saturday against Brighton.
Yeah, they were lucky, and you look at all the issues they're having at the moment and the big debacle about Trent Alexander-Arnold, and it comes down to question whether or not his offensive abilities outweigh his defensive liabilities, I suppose. That's the way to put it, and I still think you have to get him in your team. It's just, it's the other areas of the pitch that I think are affecting his performance. And don't get me wrong, when he's in a...
No, I just cut him off at that exact... That was me this time now, Stephen. Stephen Kelly's gone because we're talking about Liverpool. But Alan, we did... Ruby did mention that.
So you don't want to talk about Liverpool, yeah. And Stephen doesn't want to talk about Spurs. What are we talking about?
We're going to move on to Everton. I'm only joking. Let us...
Poor Liverpool. Like, they had to get an own goal. Like, and Brighton still probably should have got one or two more. Brighton, like, change of manager. They're flying, Alan.
Yeah, absolutely flying, yeah. And I suppose a lot of that is... that performance Saturday is reflective of all the good work that Graham Potter has done, because to be fair to the new manager coming in, he wouldn't have had that much of an impact to imprint his ideas. But I think what he's done cleverly is just carried on the good work of Potter, and that's why they employed him in the first place. And Brighton are good like that in terms of Tony Bloom and the chairman, because they have a certain way of running the club, running the model that they have, obviously the way the team wants to play, since obviously the appointment of Potter as well. And I think they've done that well, and 2-0 up, they'll be kicking themselves. But Liverpool deserve credit for getting it back to 3-2, but as you said, it was the slip at the end, and Liverpool just looked so far off where they were last year, sadly. And like, you're talking about, will we have a title race? Like, Man City are already 7 points clear. Is it 10 points clear of Liverpool? So Liverpool are not clawing that back, no way.
Don't forget, Alan, Liverpool are behind Man United. Do you have to remember that?
Yeah. So I'm not sure if that means Man United are good, Liverpool are bad. I think the two of them have major work to do, Ruby. But for Man United yesterday, I just think that kind of, it's almost like a reality check. It really is. Because for anyone after those four wins that they had thinking the good times are on the way back, I don't think that's the case at all.
Alan, one of our texters wants to know if Ronaldo should have played yesterday.
I don't think he should have started, because I think the manager went with what he felt has served him well in the previous four games. But I definitely think he should have brought him on, and I don't think it looked great when you're bringing on five substitutes and leaving him sitting there, because it raises all these questions again about Ronaldo. And that, I think Ten Hag has enough problems without having to worry about the Ronaldo distraction as well and those questions at press conferences. So he definitely should have brought him on yesterday.
Ruby, what do you think?
I think Ronaldo is an incredible footballer, but he's not a miracle worker. I don't think it mattered whether he brought him on yesterday afternoon or not. What exactly was he going to do? It took City to completely switch off United to get a couple of more goals. So 6-3 made it, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think it, no, and I don't think you're,
scoreline.
I don't think you're bringing him on to change the game, but I think you're bringing him on just to keep things kind of,
you know, I didn't want to pick you, now we're up to our neck in it, on you go.
Yeah, but the questions, because he's sitting there with a scowl on his face, you look at him every time the camera went to him, Ronaldo's raging.
He's looking at Erling Haaland thinking, God, he could be better than me.
Well, yeah, maybe that's why he was raging. But I just think, here we are discussing this, and it's something, as I said, that Ten Hag has enough problems on his hands in trying to obviously get that club back to wherever he's trying to get it back, to the glory days, without having to deal with these questions as well, because they'll always be there as long as Ronaldo's sitting on the bench. And it's all right Ten Hag coming out saying there a few weeks ago before the international break, oh, he's happy Ronaldo, he wants to say, Ten Hag doesn't want Ronaldo. And that's fair enough if he doesn't want him. He's a new manager that's come in and he's trying to obviously put his imprint on things from a fresh, clean slate. Well, then let him go.
Yeah. Okay, lads, that is all we have time for on the Premier League. Good chat, though. We're going to take a very quick break and we'll be back then looking back on the weekend's rugby.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It is now time to turn our attention to rugby. I'm delighted to say that Ian Keatley and Stephen Ferris are with us on the line now. Stephen, before we get into the actual action this weekend, what are your thoughts on the water breaks and just the length of rugby games at the moment?
Oh, geez. I thought you were going to open with a better question than that, Marie. Come on. Water breaks. I know they're being tried and tested from the start of the season, but I don't know. Like, I'm all for water breaks if it's 25 degrees and you're playing in South Africa and, you know, you're absolutely busted. But, like, I was at the Kingsbank Stadium on Friday night and it was lashing down with rain. It was start-stop. The boys didn't look like they were, you know, really sucking it in. So for me, you know, you got to kind of look at weather forecast, look at, you know, the playing conditions and then take it from there. But no, for me, water breaks should be a thing of the past, surely.
Soup breaks in December, is it? Be more efficient, I thought. You were in the Kingspan, Stephen Ferris. Great game of rugby. Leinster brought some big names north with them. And I'd say we're lucky to get away in the end.
Yeah, they were lucky to get away in the end for sure. Obviously, Aaron Sexton dropped that one over the line. I think it's only his sixth appearance for Ulster. Second start. He started the week before against Scarlett and had to come off early. But yeah, he also took that quick, you know, throw in from the line out. Robbie Henshaw then turned it over, which led to a kick to the corner, which Leinster scored off. So, you know, it was a bit of a learning curve for that young man on Friday night. But, you know, Ulster can up pride. I thought the second half performance was really dominant, and that's something that Leo Cullen's going to have to sort out. We've talked about, you know, Leinster getting bullied in the past with, you know, big packs and, you know, huge physicality, the likes of La Rochelle, the likes of the Blue Bulls last year in the URC, and Ulster certainly showed a bit of that in the second half, so plenty to work on from them. But for me, the game was definitely lost in the first half. You know, Ulster just weren't at it, and Leinster threw Dan Sheehan try, which is exceptional off a line out. He was absolutely brilliant all night. So I think Leinster probably just about deserved it in the end, Ruby.
Ian, Leinster have been so exciting to watch already this season, but ultimately they came up short. And Dan McFarlane was asked afterwards what's the difference between Ulster and Leinster, and he said they're just better at the moment. How do they close that gap, though?
Oh, I think they're definitely on the right track anyway. I don't think the weather on the weekend really allowed for pretty expansive rugby, but I've been watching them last year closely and they're definitely closing the gap. And even the first two games, they look to be creating a lot of opportunities and playing exciting rugby. And when they get a few of those boys back from the emerging Ireland, they'll have a formidable squad. Now Leinster on the weekend, they did a really good job. It just they got out to a 2-try lead and just did really well to quieten the crowd. And that's probably some things that Leo or Dan McFarland is talking about. They started really well. They knew they had to keep the Ulster crowd quiet, and they just did enough to see them off in the end.
Obviously, Stephen, I must say, I thought Archie Ringrose's hands for the first try were incredible, but it was a big matchup for Stuart McCluskey and Luke Marshall standing face to face with Ringrose and Henshaw. Will competition like that bring Ulster forward, playing against the likes of Leinster? We were on about Haaland making the Man City team better. Will Ulster facing up against Leinster and matchups like that in the centre, and again the one like you had in the front row, will that bring Ulster forward to catch Leinster?
Oh, Ruby, don't talk about Haaland. I'm a Manchester United fan. I had nightmares yesterday, so thankfully I think Ulster's worries aren't as bad as Manchester United's. And you know, you look at the two centres, Stuart McCluskey has been probably the best player for Ulster for the last 7 or 8 seasons. He's been so consistent, so good. You know, probably could have won man of the match in the first game, could have won man of the match in the second game against Scarlett. And then I'm sending myself on my way to the King's Band, right, this is the game that Stuart McCluskey really needs to stand up, walk away with that man of the match, you know, medal around his neck, you know, completely dominate Robbie Henshaw. And I know Ian's probably right with the weather, but it just didn't happen for him. It didn't happen for Luke Marshall either. And in the first 25 minutes, 30 minutes, you know, it really was Robbie Henshaw and Gary Ringrose dictating that midfield. So, I think Ulster have certainly got a lot of quality players, but when they come up against the big, strong, physical teams, the likes of Leinster, the likes of, you know, Toulouse in the European Cup over the last couple of seasons, they just struggle a little bit to get that go forward. And when I say go forward, it's just when they carry the ball to get that gain line, to give the likes of McCluskey, Luke Marshall, Rob Balakoon a bit more time in the ball. The only other thing to come out of the game, Ruby Marie, which was really disappointing to see, was Jacob Stockdale limping off at halftime. Mm-hmm. It looks like his ankle has flared up again, I know all about ankle injury, so we wish him all the very best, and he has a speedy recovery, because it didn't look good when he was limping off.
Yeah, I think we'll all echo those thoughts as well. Just to see him fit again and going a full throttle would be a great, especially in the year that we're in, and just everybody knows what he's capable of as well on the big stage. It'd be brilliant. Ian, if we're talking about Ulster having to close the gap on Leinster, do Munster have to close the gap on Ulster and Leinster then?
Yeah, at the moment it definitely looks like that. Ulster and Leinster are in the top four of the table. Munster are mid-table, and then Connacht are last. But yeah, there's definitely a bridge to be gapped. Now, all the talk coming out of the camp is that they're doing the right things. They're training really well. They're training at a high intensity, and that it's going to click soon. But at the moment, it's not clicking. It's like someone saying, "Oh, don't make mistakes." And you know when someone tells you, "Don't make mistakes," it has a knock-on effect. And you can just tell that the players are getting frustrated because they're not trying to make mistakes, but it just doesn't come across good. And then you can hear the fans; they're getting agitated because they expect more. And it's just a snowball. It's just infectious that they just keep making basic mistakes. Now, they're not trying to make these mistakes. Believe me, I've been in that scenario before, but it's just contagious at the moment. And maybe that win and they got over the line might hopefully click something, but I think they'll be very frustrated if they didn't get the bonus point after getting 3 tries in the first half.
Stephen, they'd have to be 25 minutes gone in the game. They're 21-0 up. Scanlon scored, Knox scored, Jack O'Donoghue nearly did, Scanlon scored again. But the quality of player they had on the pitch, Tadhg Byrne, Peter O'Mahony, Craig Casey, Ben Healy, how do you not get the bonus point?
Yeah, exactly. And that was the most frustrating part. And I think if they would have just scored just before half time or just after half time, I think you actually would have seen them express themselves a bit more. The shackles would have been taken off the back and they would have played a bit more expansive rugby, but they're still just at that stage where they're like, "Oh, don't make mistakes." When you're thinking like that, you can't play with freedom, and they're not playing with freedom at the moment. And it's just basic areas, and the coaches, believe me, they're working on it, and it's just one of those things that it's just going to take time, and they just need one game just to hopefully they just click, and then they'll just get their confidence back, because they're lacking it at the moment.
Stephen, is that the case that it's going to take a little bit of time when a new coaching ticket, like a full coaching ticket, comes in? Obviously, there is some consistency there, but there are a lot of new faces and new ideas coming in that people are going to have to just be patient, and results might come and go, but performances need to be a little bit more consistent.
Yeah, I don't think you can blame the coaches for, you know, the Munster lads giving away over a dozen penalties against the Dragons, like, you know, in round two. And there's lots of the same faces that are in the start, that have been in the starting team for Munster over the first 3 weeks. They've only scored 6 tries. You know, they've played Cardiff, Dragons, and Zebre Parma. Like, it's hardly like it's the, you know, the best quality of opposition in the league. And they've only scored 6 tries. And you look at Leinster and Ulster, they've scored 13 apiece. And, you know, they've played probably similar opposition in terms of the standard. I just feel that, I totally agree with Ian, they're still finding their feet. Just, you know, basic errors are costing them. They can't get any flow at all. It doesn't matter, you know, if Joey Carby comes on in the 50th minute against Zebre, you just can't get it going. And, you know, when you have a lot of dominance up front, it usually is a lovely platform to play some nice attacking rugby off. But for some reason or another, this Munster team just aren't firing. And then you hear that, you know, during the week, RG Snyman, he's not going to be back for a while. And, you know, there just seems to be a little bit of negativity coming out of the Munster camp. And I actually tipped them this year to, you know, to kick on and to really show what they're made of, and maybe see a little bit of the Munster of old. But Graham Rowntree, we all know how good he was with Leicester Tigers and how dominant, you know, the forward pack was when he played, and I expected a bit of that to come back, but we just haven't seen it yet. But it's a long, long old season, and you know, it's all about peaking at the right times, and, you know, hopefully Munster can get it together.
With a bit of luck, they can. They place Connacht at the weekend, who will be back from a torrid trip to South Africa. Gents, thanks very much for your time. Gavin Coombs, hopefully, will be back for Munster at the weekend as well. It's time for a quick commercial break.
Welcome back. Now, before we turn our attention to football again, Ruby, we have a text in from Kevin in Limerick. He wants to know what you made of the Christophe Soumillon incident.
Well, what did I make? I think Christophe Soumillon even got an appropriate ban. Marie is what I would think. I don't think that Christophe Soumillon's intention was to knock Ross O'Ryan off the horse. I actually think his intention was to create a bit of room for himself and get himself out of a pocket. He got a racing manoeuvre completely wrong and ended up knocking Ross O'Ryan off the horse. Now, people will say, oh, only 2 months for that. Bundy Aki got 8 weeks in South Africa. A ban is different for a jockey. It's probably a 30 race meeting ban for Christophe Soumillon, 20 in France and 10 in Japan. So it's a pretty significant ban. I think it was a manoeuvre that went wrong. I don't think there was any intention in what he didn't intend to do what happened, and Ross O'Ryan got up. It looked bad and he got an appropriate ban. That's what I think.
Well, I can tell you now, that is the absolute opposite to what Kevin in Limerick thinks. He thought it was reckless, dangerous, and he was a lucky man to only get 3 months. There you go.
Yeah, but he would have been lucky. He'd been unlucky to get 3 because he only got 2.
Right, let's turn our attention now back to the football and cross over to Tulka Park, where Tony O'Donoghue is standing by for the meeting of Shelburne and St. Patrick's Athletic. Tony, how is everything building up there?
And nicely, actually. I'm sitting down for a change, which is lovely. Good. Tulka Park, there's a lovely vibe about this place. I do love it. I hope it does stay in football. And this game between the two Dublin rivals this evening, well, there's plenty of spice anyway, that's for sure. This is the fixture, you might remember, that had to be rearranged as St. Pat's were stranded in Sofia after a big European win against CSKA. Unable, they said, to source a charter flight home. And Shelburne were furious at having the game postponed. And from what I'm hearing, they even went as far as trying to arrange flights for their Dublin rivals to get them home. But the game was rescheduled to this evening rather than the points being awarded to Shelburne for the fixture not being fulfilled by their opponents. Because, look, every time one of our clubs go over to Europe, if they don't come back, there's a knock-on effect on the league and the opponents and attendances and all of that. So you can see Shelburne have a point as well, but it definitely adds a bit of spice this evening, no doubt about that. The clubs have met twice already on the opening night of the season. That was Damien Duff's first game in charge of Shells, you'll remember. And it was the visitors under Tim Clancy who took the spoils. That was a 3-0 win for Pats here in Tulka. But the Duffer had his revenge in Inchicore, Shells winning 2-1. The Reds have secured their place in the Premier Division. That's the Shelburne Reds. The first time in 16 years they've managed consecutive seasons in the top flight. So they'll be delighted with that. But their last league win was in August against UCD, and they failed to win in seven league matches since. So they'll also be without Jack Moylan, hugely influential. Brian McManus through injury. They have another Dublin Derby week at the weekend. That'll be against Shamrock Rovers. That's on TV, by the way, and an FAI Cup semi-final to look forward to also on TV Sunday week down in Waterford. So they'll be anxious to get that show on the road. But Pats themselves could be vulnerable this evening. They're missing hugely significant players. Chris Forrester, Tom Gravosti and Anto Breslin are all out through suspension, and the Saints are 5 points behind Dundalk. They were beaten at home by Derry last Friday. They will stay fourth this evening, but their next game is against Dundalk. They'll want to close the gap because fourth place mightn't be enough. I tell you what, St. Pat's want Derry to win the cup final in order to, you know, finish Derry to be one of the top three and give it fourth place. Because all the other teams won't have that opportunity. Pats have given up their cup, of course. So, you know, there's a lot riding on tonight, but Pats are missing a lot of key players, so I think it's going to be difficult for them.
Okay, well, Alan Cawley is heading over there afterwards, so you might spot him.
I keep a place for him, yeah.
Thanks, Tony.
I'll put on the kettle.
Lovely, Tony.
I remember Al watching you here, God, when I was only a boy.
Right, well, on that note, before...
Is there a soccer in the kettle, there is?
Just about. I actually was up here in the dark until a few minutes ago, going, I'm after making a lot of notes for this report. Any chance of putting on a light?
Well, Tony, before you give Alan Cawley the opportunity to relive the glory days, we are going to go because we have no more time. But thank you so much for checking in with us. Alan, thank you for being in studio. Ruby, as always, thank you for your company. Betty De Silva is up next. RTE 2FM.